Congress's impeachment inquiry into U.S. President Donald Trump is gaining momentum. VOA's Marissa Melton has more.
President Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, told ABC's This Week he'll only cooperate with a House impeachment effort if President Trump wants him to.
I have to be guided by my client, frankly. I'm a lawyer. It's his privilege, not mine.
Central to the investigation is the effort to have Ukraine conduct a corruption probe into Joe Biden and his son's dealings with the Ukrainian energy company. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff, also on ABC's This Week, says the committee hasn't decided yet whether to call the former New York City mayor to testify.
So we want to flesh out the facts, then we'll make a determination about whether it would be productive to bring in a witness like Rudy Giuliani.
President Trump says he did nothing wrong. Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Tens of thousands of Russians jammed into a central Moscow square Sunday as opposition groups sought to regain momentum following a summer of demonstrations against Russia's political system. The event was the first time that anti-corruption crusader Alexei Navalny has appeared at a demonstration since he was released from jail last month. He had been held for 30 days for repeatedly organizing unauthorized public gatherings. Former Austrian Chancellor Sebastian Kurz's Conservative Party has won the snap election he called when his government collapsed months ago. With most of the votes counted, the People's Party won 37% of the votes. Kurz's government collapsed in May after a video emerged showing leaders of his coalition partner, the far-right Freedom Party, cozying up to Russian oligarchs. Hurricane Lorenzo lost some force Sunday, weakening to a Category 4 storm. The National Hurricane Center says the powerful storm is expected to pass over or near the Azores on Tuesday. From Washington, you're listening to VOA News. Just 1 in 5 registered voters took part in Afghanistan's election on Saturday, an official says, raising fears that an unclear result could drive further instability. David Doyle reports.
Voter disinterest and Taliban threats appear to have dampened turnout in Afghanistan's presidential election, raising concerns that an unclear result could drive the war-torn country into further chaos. Previous elections have been marred by dozens of deaths, allegations of voter fraud, and accusations that the Election Commission was not independent. Issues that hung over Saturday's vote. In what is seen as a test of the Western-backed government's ability to protect democracy against Taliban attempts to derail it, those who did emerge from the voting booths said they want their choices to be respected. The days after voting may also be fraught. After the last election, the Taliban often attacked those transporting ballot boxes from local centres to larger regional offices for counting. Preliminary results are not expected until October the 19th.
That is Reuters' David Doyle reporting. Britain's Boris Johnson says he will not resign, even if he fails to secure a withdrawal deal with the European Union before the end of October. We get more in this report.
You are not free!
As his Conservatives' annual conference begins in Manchester, the Prime Minister is seeking to rally his party behind his do-or-die message, that he will deliver Brexit by the end of October, with or without a deal.
Order!
But he's declined to explain how he will circumvent a law passed by Parliament that would force him to ask the EU for a delay to Brexit if he has not secured a withdrawal deal by the end of an EU summit on October the 17th and 18th.
Not a good start, Boris.
He's called that law the Surrender Act. Opposition lawmakers have said such language is stoking division in an already fractured country.
With many of us in this place subject to death threats and abuse every single day.
I have to say, Mr. Speaker, I've never heard such humbug in all my life.
Speaking on the Andrew Marr show on Sunday...
Including you.
I think I've been a model of restraint, but I think everybody should calm down.
UN humanitarian agencies are shifting efforts away from emergency aid to long-term recovery assistance for Hurricane Dorian survivors in the Bahamas. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Aid agencies rushed life-saving aid into the Bahamas after Hurricane Dorian, a deadly Category 5 storm, devastated the islands early this month. The toll from this disaster is huge. Latest UN reports put the number of dead at 53, including 600 missing. Chief of Press and External Relations at the UN in Geneva, Réal LeBlanc, says the Bahamian government is now shifting emergency efforts to recovery.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, September 30th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia's government denies President George Weah held a lavish birthday party in Florida.
This is a prime example of how members of the opposition make use of social media to spread lies and falsehoods, all in an attempt to tarnish the image of the president.
Eugene Nambo is Liberia's information minister on World Heart Day on Sunday. Hope endures for Nigerian cardiac patients. A 22-year-old Uganda's Makerere University student committed suicide. And Iswatini's biggest political movement plans more action in support of ongoing public sector workers' strike.
We are looking into upscaling the action so that we push this government, because we know that only through pushing His Majesty's government will the possibility for them to listen.
Wandile Jurudlu is the Secretary General of Eswatini's Pudemo political movement. And today is the deadline for Kenyans to exchange the old 1,000 shilling note currency with the new one. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberia's Minister of Information says President George Weah did not have a lavish birthday party at his Florida residence. Trending on social media last week was that Mr. Weah was going to celebrate his 53rd birthday in Miami, spending up to $250,000. Eugene Nambu said the president had a small dinner with his family members and close friends. President Weah's critics have having a party showed that the president was out of touch with developments at home, especially with a health workers' strike and other serious economic challenges. Nambwe said the president had a small dinner with family members. He accused the opposition of spreading falsehoods on social media to tarnish the president's image.
The president is definitely in touch with the current economic situation. This is why he continues to make the case for Liberia. He continues to put in place the right policies and actions to resolve the economic situation that we have in our country that has its roots in some historical antecedents. But I just want to say to you, this is a clear example of how members of the opposition make use the social media to spread lies and falsehoods, all in an attempt to tarnish the image of the president. The president has left already. He's not having any lavish party as they are lying about. We had a small dinner for him last night for those members of his family who are here, some of the sisters, his wife, who is remaining here, who is not being in Liberia, and members of a Pan-African group. We are all there. We had a small dinner of few persons. It's not true that the president is going to spend $250,000 for party. It's not true. It's just a different lie. And now we have to go and keep running after somebody who would invent a lie. And then I have to come and deal with the lies. There are times when we just go ahead with the work of the people elected him to do and not be distracted by some of these people who are less busy instead of focusing on developing the country, contributing as loyal opposition. They are focused on causing problems for the state by spreading lies and hate messages.
President George Weah's presentation at the United Nations, the 74th UN General Assembly. How do you think is the speech is being received?
The president's speech was very clear when he cited the fact that some members of the opposition, particularly some of those who have participated in the gun election in 2017, have resorted to utilizing hate speech, incitement, and all of these are not attributes of a democratic dispensation. So the president was very right to fight this because we are all seeking to protect the democratic state that we have. So if they are keeping menaces, it is the job of the president to point this out and to urge all Liberians. He did not stop just by pointing out the current situation with the incitement, the big use of social media, hate speech, and all of those. He also suggested a remedy, you know, that all Liberians should see our country as the one thing that we all have together and work together in spite of the political and other differences that we have.
What some people say that President Weah is getting back exactly what he did in opposition to the previous government, which was led by Ellen Johnson Sirleaf.
Mr. President has always behaved as a responsible member of the opposition, loyal to the country. He even accepted, like he said in his speech, you know, at some point, to be the peak ambassador for Liberia when he was asked to do so by former President Sirleaf. That's the sort of alternate engagement that the opposition is required to do. It is also the job of the opposition to keep the government's feet to the fire, but you can do so without resorting to incitement, hate speech, and the total misuse of social media platforms that we have.
Eugene Nambo is Liberia's information minister. Health experts say Nigeria is seeing an increase cases of heart disease. Low awareness, lack of adequate medical facilities and expertise are major factors worsening the situation in the country. But as Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja, a nonprofit is collaborating with the World Heart Federation to provide proper education and treatment for underprivileged patients.
Participants chat at an awareness and fundraising event to mark World Heart Day in Abuja, the Nigerian capital. The program is organized by the non-profit Global Development and Charity Support Foundation in collaboration with the World Heart Federation. Head of the non-profit, Samuel Asumaga, says apart from educating locals on the early signs of heart disease, his organization is making funds available to treat patients.
When you have a healthy heart, then you can lead a healthy life. Then a lot of this heart-related mortality can be avoided.
The nonprofit targets about 1,000 patients for treatment. A 2018 WHO country profile reveals cardiovascular diseases is the leading cause of deaths among non-communicable diseases in Nigeria, with over 11% prevalence. Dauda Balami is a cardiologist.
Whichever heart disease you want to look at, whether it's heart failure, whether it's coronary artery disease, the incidence of patients who are coming forward to hospital is on the rise.
Congenital heart deformities in children are also on the rise. Namdi Azubike's one-year-old child was diagnosed with a heart condition in 2015.
We found out that he's not breathing very well, so we went to hospital after the analysis. Then the doctor now told us that he's having a hole in the heart.
Heart-related conditions often require tertiary-level care and sophisticated surgeries, but Nigeria lacks medical facilities and the expertise needed. Pediatrician and cardiologist Tolu Utele admits the situation is serious.
It is almost like a death sentence for children that are born with these heart defects. All we do in most places is to manage them until they die, and many of them actually end up dying.
As talks around heart issues continue in Nigeria, citizens, nonprofits, and many with conditions hope things get better. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
In Eswatini, formerly Swaziland, the Pudemo political movement says it is planning more action this Wednesday in support of ongoing public sector workers' strike. Mwandile Zulu, Pudemo Secretary General, says the group has begun lobbying other workers' union and university students to join the strike and put pressure on His Majesty King Mswati III government to meet the demands of the workers for cost of living adjustment.
When they were planning to shut down Manzini being the hub, like the biggest city after the capital, Mbale. And Pudemo's position is we support this protest action because we hold it is justifiable for a cost of living adjustment shouldn't be a debate because the inflation has really been escalating in the couple of years. So to keep up with the cost, government or any employer should be sensitive to that reality. So for that reason, we support the strike.
If the workers are demanding cost of living adjustment, does the government have the means to do that?
It goes without saying that His Majesty's government has a lot of money. There are many vanity projects that they are engaging in building. As we speak, they are building a convention center. Of course, at the command of the king, which is worth almost $6 billion. It's about to be completed. They have just finished, a year or two ago, finished building an airport in the eastern region, which is very, very quiet airport. And we called and raised those that reality that building, engaging in projects that will not stimulate the economy is not supposed to be the way to go. But because they have the money and they have to please the king, they have to go on and do this vanity project. But on top of that, there are lots of trips. As we speak, the king is at New York. attending the United Nations General Assembly with an entourage of almost 200 people, for whom 90% of them are nothing but visitors, as good as tourists, into New York. That is to prove to you and anybody that His Majesty's government has enough money. It's only political will to spend the money where it matters the most, which would be, among other, meeting workers' demand around cost of living adjustments.
In terms of Wednesday's action, suppose the government still does not listen to the demands of the workers. What other redress do you have?
We are now lobbying for more sectors to join the strike. So far, it has been the public sector unions, together with the political parties, in particular Podemo and other progressive formations. But now we are looking into lobbying private sector unions, workers, to join the strike. You will also understand that students at the university and many other colleges are also at loggerheads with the administration and the state or the government for failure of meeting scholarship allowance, as well as many other crucial needs for the upkeep of the various institutions. So we are looking into upscaling the action so that we push this government, because we know that only through pushing His Majesty's government will the possibility for them to listen.
Wandile Jujlu is the Secretary General of the People's United Democratic Movement, PUDEMO Movement. He was speaking with us from the Eswatini's capital, Mbabane. Today is Monday, September 30th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 17 minutes past the hour. Kenyans have until midnight, Monday, September 30th, to exchange the old 1,000 shilling note currency with the new one before it becomes valueless. According to the Central Bank of Kenya and Governor Patrick Njoroge, there will be no extension. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
The 90 days that Kenyans were given to trade the 1,000 shilling note expires today, 30th September, as the old currency will have no value. According to the Central Bank of Kenya, the move to have currency changed as per the Kenya's 2010 constitution was also meant to curb money laundering and counterfeit currency. Central Bank of Kenya Governor Patrick Njoroge said that today's date is fixed and that no time will be added to beat the deadline.
Close of business September 30th. You cannot go backwards. So it closes everything. It is fixed. I guess I would say it's fixed in concrete. What is most important now is to make sure that, you know, people have vacuumed their houses. And it is important for all the actors, all concerned, to do what they can. Make sure that those currencies get to the central bank before the end, close of business.
Already, business entities such as banks, telecom shops, leading retailers, among other businesses, have stopped transacting the 1,000 note ahead of the central bank's deadline. Mr. Njoroge says wheat farmers in the country are experiencing the influx as most of the buyers are using the old currency for cash transaction, a move he says is worrying.
Currently, we have a problem in Narok. You have, Narok now, they are reaping they're harvesting the wheat. And so we've seen an influx of purchasers who are purchasing wheat, cash. And let's just say those transactions are quite concerned to us.
Already, the East Africa neighboring countries have stopped trading the old 1,000 note currency at the border points. However, President Uhuru Kenyatta had earlier said that the move to change the currency will see a positive economic impact to the country.
Ladies and gentlemen, a nation's currency is not merely an instrument for exchange of value. Beyond being a medium of exchange, a store of value, an unit of account, the motifs and design elements in currencies present a unique way of recording history, celebrating a country's diverse culture, and our natural environment.
A new print of the 1,000 shilling banknote, the largest denomination, was rolled out in June, with Kenyans given to September 30th to exchange their old notes at the bank. The Constitution of Kenya 2010 states that notes and coins shall not bear the portrait of any individual, but instead have geographical features found in Kenya, including wildlife. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
A 22-year-old Uganda's Makerere University student committed suicide. Javier Sibuema is a staff writer for the online PML Daily. He said the four-year student, Ashra Nsubuga, died from hanging.
He committed suicide in his room because his roommate says he left him in the morning. It was a Sunday, and the roommate went to a Sunday service in the morning. By the time he came back, he found the door closed. It was locked, and then he tried to peep through the window, and then he saw someone hiding. Then he made an alarm that made people gather at the place, and then they catch the police, and that has actually opened the file under SB 08-29-2009, the case at the police. Of course, a number of cases have been in the past have been reported of the same. In 2011, one Francis Kigeni, 22 years, he was a final student of social science, he jumped from a building, 50th floor, at the hostel called Baston, and he died instantly. The deceased left a note complaining that he had actually trouble that no one was willing to listen to. In November 2011, another Emmanuel Kagina, a second-year student at the Faculty of Arts at the same university, jumped from a hostel and actually died instantly also. Again, in the same month, another one called Hassan Ganz, a second-year student of information technology, was arrested at a certain home called Nkrumah. He came down from the fourth floor of the girls' hostel called Main Stewart Hall. She also died instantly. In September 2016, Ronald Abaho was also a student. He tried to commit suicide after he lost his tuition fees to sports betting. And last year, another one called Joshua, a fourth-year student of forestry at Makerere University, also committed suicide at the same hall called Isriwa, where this one was residing. So such cases have been very common, and I know there are many others that media can't trace. So such issues are there, and we really think they're all attached to losing tuition, having debt, and things like that. But of course, information on the ground on the death of Nsubuga is that he really had debt and he lost money. Of course, he tried to put money in a scheme that he can duplicate and pay the debt. Of course, according to sources that his friend circles, and then they're telling that he lost this money too and he had no option whatsoever.
Everywhere you go to school, even here in the United States, students are in debt following their graduation, even while they are in school, whether you're undergraduate or you're graduate student. Now, I just wanted you to clarify, although the police are investigating, but the accounts we are reading is that the student was probably in debt. Did the debt come from going to school as a student, or there's something else he was involved in?
Definitely, you know, by the time someone goes to university here, businesses. For this one, I'm told he was a government student, but of course, to engage in other activities of maybe popping up. Of course, for example, some of the students at the university who are privately sponsored, sometimes they struggle to look for a top-up and maybe to make a living.
Javira Sibuami is a staff writer for the online PML Daily of Uganda. You're speaking with us from Kampala, Uganda. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sporting. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with results from the second leg of the CAF Champions League matches played this past weekend across the continent. Two-time CAF Champions League champions Enyimba International of Nigeria were eliminated from the CAF Champions League on Sunday, leaving Nigeria without a club in the upcoming group phase of the Elite African Club competition. A goal just after halftime from Mohamed Musa gave Al Hilal of Sudan a 1-0 victory over
Enyimba in Omdurman to ensure the East Africans won by the same scoreline overall after a goalless first leg. Holders Esperance of Tunisia survived the scare from Chilean opponent Elect Sport coming from behind to win 2-1 and 3-2 on aggregate to achieve a fourth successive appearance at the group stage. They are being joined by compatriots Etoile du Sahel, who despite finishing with 10 men overturned a 2-0 loss from the first leg against Ghana's Asante Kotoko, beating Kotoko 3-0 in Monastir to go through. Five-time champions TP Mazembe from DR Congo made light work of Fusa Juniors with a 3-1 victory to seal their third successive group stage berth, and they have company in internal rivals and 1973 winners AS Vita, who also made it 3 in a row at the last 16. Record 8-time winners Al Ahly of Egypt qualify for the group stage for the 5th season on the trot. They achieved the feat after beating Equatoguinean's Kano Sport 4-0 to complete a double 6-0 on aggregate. Away from the former winners, Angola has two representatives in rivals, Petro Atletico and Primero de Agosto, whilst Al Hilal of Sudan, FC Platinum of Zimbabwe and Zesco United of Zambia complete the list. The draw for the group stage will take place on Wednesday, 9th of October in Cairo, Egypt. Staying with football news, Uganda are the champions of the inaugural COSAFA Under-17 Women's Cup after defeating South Africa 2-1 in the final in Port Louis in Mauritius on Sunday. On their road to the final, the Christchurch Cranes humiliated Botswana 12-0, while Bantawana beat Zambia 2-1 in their respective semi-finals. While South Africa was bidding to avoid back-to-back COSAFA youth title misses after the under-20 women lost in August, the East African guests were aiming to emulate Tanzania's under-20 success. Zambia beat Botswana 3-0 to win the bronze. And in Nigeria, mother of the former Super Eagles national football team coach, Samson Siasia, has been released 10 weeks after she was kidnapped in her hometown of Bayelsa State. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. In Eswatini, formerly Swaziland, the Pudemo political movement said it is planning more action this Wednesday in support of ongoing public sector workers' strike. Mwandile Zuzulu, Pudemo Secretary General, says the group has begun lobbying other workers' unions and university students to join the strike and put pressure on His Majesty King Mswati III government to meet the demands of the workers for cost of living adjustment. Liberia's Minister of Information says President George Weah did not have a lavish birthday party at his Florida residence. Trending on social media last week was that Mr. Weah was going to celebrate his 53rd birthday in Miami, spending about $250,000. Eugene Nambuye said the president had a small dinner with family members and close friends. President Weah's critics said having a party showed the president was out of touch with developments at home, especially with a health workers' strike and other serious economic challenges. Nambuye accused the opposition of spreading falsehoods on social media to tarnish the president's image. That is it for this Monday, September 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson Omale, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you a productive week.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.